We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And Oladipo once it again, approaching 2 minutes to play. With the left hand and authority! McKee gets it in the middle for the win! It's 0.4 seconds! One of the greatest clutch playoff performers of his generation has apparently done it again.
Yeah! Chicken.
9 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds. Oladipo to win
another
it.
Another one!
He got
another
it!
One!
Oladipo!
Another one!
What is going on, Pacer Nation? Welcome back to another episode here of Setting the Pace on PacersTalk.net. The Indiana Pacers have concluded their five-game road trip with 3 wins and 2 losses. On Saturday night, they faced the New York Knicks, who had just fired David Fizdale. They brought in new head coach for the intern, Mike Miller. The Knicks were inspired, they were feisty, but they weren't good enough free throw shooters, and they missed one of the final 2 free throws, letting the Pacers squeak out of there with a win 104-103. Jeremy Lamb hit a 3-point play with about 5 minutes left to go in the game, and the Pacers did not score again after Jeremy Lamb's 3-point play. It was the defense by Miles Turner as he anchored the Indiana Pacers with 5 blocks in that game, helping the Pacers seal the deal against the New York Knicks. Domantas Sabonis had another stellar game, 19 points, 15 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, and 1 steal. The only negative, 5 turnovers. T.J. McConnell was awesome off the bench as well. He had 11 assists and was a plus 6 for the game. The Indiana Pacers head home to face the Los Angeles Clippers on Monday. We'll preview that game right after this.
What up, everybody? Mike Focci here, and if you haven't already checked it out, go to PacersTalk.net for the latest coverage on all Pacer news. We have game recaps, game previews, and everything you can imagine. Let's go, Pacers.
So the Indiana Pacers are finally back home after a 5-game road trip, and they will be playing 5 of their next 6 games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, make sure you do that, because these are going to be some really fun games, and kicking those games off will be the Los Angeles Clippers making their only appearance at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and you will get to boo former Indiana Pacer Paul George as he makes his 3rd appearance back at Bankers Life Fieldhouse since requesting a trade. The first 2 obviously were with Oklahoma City. You also get to see Kawhi Leonard. Now, there is a possibility that he does not play because of load management. The Clippers are facing the Washington Wizards Sunday night, so I'm recording this Sunday afternoon around 3:30, so that game has not happened yet. So I would expect Kawhi to play against the Pacers, but there is a possibility he could sit out for load management reasons. But with that being said, you know, the Clippers have done pretty good this year. They're 16-7 overall, you know, just 1 game better than the Pacers right now. And they just got beat by the Milwaukee Bucks pretty handily on Friday night, and with this roster that the Clippers have put together, I mean, they're a threat any night to take anybody down. So just looking at who they have, they've got Kawhi Leonard, of course, is averaging 24 points a game, 7.7 rebounds, 5.2 assists, 2 steals a game, and almost 1 block a game. Then you bring Paul George, the other wing, 22 points per game. He's got 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal. And then off the bench, this is where I think the Pacers are going to really struggle in this game, is the bench play. Of course, Lou Williams, sixth man of the year last year, he's putting up 20.7 points a game with 6.2 assists. And his counterpart, who is also up for sixth man of the year, Montrezl Harrell, he's averaging 18.7 points a game, 8 rebounds, and 1 block. So both Harrell and Lou Williams, of course, are playing starters minutes, so expect to see a heavy dose of them out there. But they have just been so good off the bench, and if you look at the Pacers, they've been putting Sabonis with the bench. You know, it'd be interesting to see how Sabonis does against Harrell. Someone that's a little bit quicker is going to be involved in that pick and roll with Lou Williams, and, you know, if T.J. McConnell is going to be guarding Lou Williams or whomever it may be, whether it's Aaron Holiday, hopefully Malcolm Brogdon's back. That's another thing. We're not sure if Brogdon will be back for this game, so we're going to have to see how the Pacers stagger their minutes. But, you know, whether it's Aaron Holiday or T.J. McConnell on Lou Williams, how are they going to defend this pick and roll? And, you know, it wouldn't be such a bad idea maybe to put Miles Turner with that second unit for a little bit just to try to stop that pick and roll penetration and at least have that rim protection there with Harrell and Williams being so heavily involved together. But, you know, starting-wise, I mean, I think this is going to be the biggest matchup for T.J. Warren. He hasn't really had a super strong defender guarding him all season long. Not bad defenders, but good defenders. But nobody as talented defensively as Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I mean, those are two of the top wing defenders in the entire NBA. So having those guys on him is going to be tough. I think T.J. Warren will still put up decent numbers because he's just a bucket getter, but that's going to be a tough matchup for him. And then you got Malcolm Brogdon going up against Patrick Beverley. Say what you want about Patrick Beverley. I'm a huge Pat Beverley guy. I just love the way he plays, and I think that if Aaron Holiday starts, he could be in for a little bit of a rude awakening with Pat Beverley just because, you know, Bev is just who he is, and he's not going to quit. He's a dog, and it might be fun to see Aaron versus Pat, you know, just to see those two go at it, but I think that, you know, Beverley could cause some problems. I think the Pacers really have to feast on the big man. Mo Harkless is the starting power forward for the Los Angeles Clippers, and Zubac is the starting center. Now, he's an okay young player, but I think that Sabonis and Turner really have to take advantage here of these two big men down low, because if the Pacers want to win this game, you know, trying to out-duel the backcourt of the Clippers is not the way to do it. And I think that the Pacers need to watch out for double teams from Paul George, from, you know, Mo Harkless is a pretty solid defender, you know, from Kawhi Leonard. All these guys are super long. It's the length of this Clippers team that causes so many teams problems defensively. And we saw length cause the Pacers problems when they played the Milwaukee Bucks a couple Saturdays ago. So it's just one of those things where the Pacers are going to take their time and just really focus here and take care of the basketball, because if the Pacers turn the ball over a lot, the Clippers will make you pay. They're one of the best teams at forcing turnovers, and it's because of their defense. So, you know, this Clippers team, can't, you know, say enough great things about them. I mean, I don't want to overhype them because they're still, you know, trying to figure each other out chemistry-wise. But overall, I mean, their roster is so deep. Guys off the bench that I like, Jamichael Green and Landry Shamet. You know, I mean, this team is deep. That's one of the things the Pacers have had an advantage of, is that their bench has been really good this year. Doug McDermott has been awesome. Justin Holiday has been awesome. Cannot talk for some reason. I apologize. But regardless, I mean, this team has been pretty good, you know, 1 through 10, and the same can go for the Clippers. So really just going to be a game of the Pacers to take care of the ball, and hopefully they get a little bit of a fatigued Clippers team. That could make a huge difference. The Clippers will be on the second half of a back-to-back, 3 games in 4 nights. The Pacers will be playing their third game in 4 nights. It's just kind of crazy. The Pacers go on a 5-game road trip, starting last Saturday, ending the following Saturday. So 8 days, 5 games, come home, have to get, you know, come home early Sunday morning, get a little bit of a break, and then they got a game Monday night. Just a crazy schedule that the NBA can be, and I know that's why some people would like the league to shorten the length of the season, but, you know, it is what it is. These guys are getting paid. This Pacers team is extremely young, so hopefully they'll get some rest on Sunday night, relax, and then be ready to go on Monday, because this is a game that is another prove it to the league game. You know, they lost to the Sixers in a very close game, just poor execution down the stretch. And you know, they almost blew it to the Knicks, had a hard time closing out against the Pistons. I mean, the Pacers have just not been a good late-game execution team, and this Clippers team is just really good. So you don't want to get into a situation where you're having to face the Clippers in a tight ball game and trying to win against two clutch players and, you know, the Pacers, who still have yet to find out who their most clutch player is at this point. Just a lot of turnovers in the clutch, can't get the ball in bounds. It's just not been pretty for the Pacers, and that's what you're hoping Oladipo can bring to the team, is save them when it's getting close with the game on the line. That's what he does, but still not sure what he's going to do when he gets back. So anyway, guys, I think it really just comes down to taking care of the basketball, you know, not overreacting to how talented this team is, and just playing your game. Just play your games, Pacers, and you'll be fine. Stay competitive. I mean, prove it to the league that you can beat this Clippers team, because yes, you beat the Utah Jazz, but the Utah Jazz have been struggling, and, you know, it is what it is. The Clippers are much better than the Utah Jazz. You know, lose a close game to Philadelphia. You lose a close game to Houston, who is a pretty solid Western Conference team as well, without Malcolm Brogdon and Miles Turner and Jeremy Lamb. So, I mean, you're playing without three of your five starters. So, you know, it's just another opportunity for the Pacers to prove that they are an elite team, and they need to win some of these games that are coming up. I mean, looking at the rest of their schedule, they've got the Clippers on Monday. They got the Celtics on Wednesday, the Hawks on Friday, the Hornets on Sunday. Then they play the Lakers the following Tuesday, and then the Kings to conclude that five of their next six at home against the Kings. So there's some winnable games in there, and they've been stuck in that sixth seed for a while. The Celtics have 16 wins. That's a game you gotta at least be competitive in. And, you know, they can win that game. I don't have any doubt they can win that game. And I think they can win that in the interior once again. But it's just one of those things where the Pacers have got to start winning these games at home against better competition to move up in the standings. Because if they continue to play good basketball but not great, then they're going to be stuck starting a playoff series on the road. Now, you might say, well, we're going to get Oladipo back, we'll be fine. Well, that's a good argument, but it would be much better to have a playoff series at home, and possibly two. I mean, the Raptors are doing great. The Heat are doing great. The Sixers are doing great. I mean, if you look at the standings right now, Milwaukee is 20-3, and they have won 14 straight. They're not getting out of the one seed. But Boston, Miami, and Philadelphia all have 16 wins. Toronto is 15-6. The Pacers are right there. They're 15-8. They just have to win some of these games to push through and hopefully get a 2 or 3 seed. I mean, they're talented enough. It's just they're going to have to win these games against these good teams to prove that they belong. If not, sure, they can stay in the 6th seed and play a Miami or a Toronto or a Philadelphia or Boston in the playoffs. But I'd rather have those games at home. So that's why I'm saying defend home court. A lot of these teams have been good at home, and honestly, if you look at the home schedule for those 16, Milwaukee is 10-1 at home, Boston and Miami are both 9-0, Philadelphia is 11-0 at home, and both Indiana and Toronto are 9-2 at home. So all really good home records, but you gotta keep winning at home against good teams. So anyway, guys, I'm going to get out of the way, and joining us in the next segment, you guys know him on Twitter as Scott with Brian. Yes, I get it. There is some questions of who he is, why he is the way that he is, but he addresses all that, and he gives you a little insight on the Pacers, what he's seen from them so far. He spent 7 years in the NBA. I think he's got a lot of good basketball knowledge, so whether you like him or not, I think that you will enjoy his content here on this podcast as he kind of shows you what the Pacers are and aren't. So anyways, I'm going to get out of the way, and we'll talk to Scott with Brian. Joining us right now on Setting the Pace, you guys know him on Twitter as Scott with Brian. It's Brian Oehringer. Brian, what's going on, man?
Doing good, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, and the Pacers just got off a five-game road trip with a tight win there against the New York Knicks. What have you been noticing about the Pacers so far this season?
You know, I think they're just a really well-coached, scrappy team. You know, I think obviously, you know, missing their best player is a is something a lot of guys have to compensate for, but they've done a pretty good job of it. I think Brogdon obviously is having a career year. I think Sabonis has really stepped his game up, and, you know, they have a whole bunch of role players that just kind of, you know their job and do what the team needs to win. And I think so far it's been a pretty good formula and has them in a good position to really thrive, when he gets back out there.
Now, you did a little piece on Domantas Sabonis that you posted on YouTube, and I would like for you just to kind of recap that piece, that way you don't give out all the information and people can go check it out, but just kind of a breakdown of what you were showing on that video.
So, yeah, I mean, I really took a look at the whole team, actually. It's just a video kind of showing, you know, what their identity is, how they've been able to still be successful, even without Vic. And, yeah, Sabonis is a big part of that. I mean, I showcase, you know, what a phenomenal passer he is, how good of a mid-range shooter, what a good screen setter he is, how he can still play in the post and bang and do some of the old school stuff. Just a really versatile game that I think is, stepped up even more, like I said, in needing to take a bigger role this season. But, yeah, I mean, I talked a ton about, you know, how they just play basketball. You know, they take the open shot, whether it be Brogdon from mid-range, Lamb, TJ Warren, McConnell even, you know, all those guys just are not afraid to take a 17, 18-foot pull-up, and, they're shooting at a really high level. And as a team, you know, I think they're, top 10 in defensive rating, so they're, you know, they grind it out defensively. They really make you work for just about everything. And, you know, to me, I think Nate McMillan's just one of the best coaches in the league. And, I think they're I picked them to win 50 games this season, and it's looking like they might even win more than that if Vic comes back, you know, anytime soon.
Yeah, we're still not sure on that timetable for Vic's return. I think that we're just trying to be cautious with that. Don't want him to get hurt, especially with the way the team has been playing. You know, have a favorable schedule, but they're still winning the games you got to win. And so, you know, a lot of people have made a big deal about the Pacers not shooting enough threes and shooting too many mid-range shots. And what is your take on the amount of threes being shot in today's NBA and how the Pacers are attacking that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there's a little bit of when everybody else zigs, sometimes you have to zag to it, you know, and you see plenty of teams that are, you know, there's not a perfect correlation between just taking threes and being a good offensive team. There's plenty of teams that take a ton of threes, like Chicago, for example, and don't make them and just can't win games. You know, I think the Pacers have guys, like Lamb, for example, who's normally a pretty good three-point shooter, but he's not shooting it great from there this season, but he's really good at like a 7-8 foot push floater. He's really good from the elbows. Warren, you know, he's shooting the ball well from three, but he's in his career been more of a mid-range player overall. McConnell's always been, you know, a mid-range guy for the most part. Sabonis, you know, hasn't really been able to extend it to three all that much. So, you know, I think it's mostly just a function of, you know, that's kind of their personnel, and that's where those guys are most comfortable shooting the ball from. And, you know, when you have teams playing this the drop coverage that they do in the NBA, which is basically, you know, the big man's pretty much under the basket on a pick and roll, and they're just conceding wide open elbow pull-ups, you know, that's the open shot. And I think Indiana's taking the open shot, and so far, you know, I don't think you can really complain about the results all that much.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, they're getting wins. It just might not be the way that you would like to see them do it based on the way analytics are being used in today's game. But it's also about the roster construction. You know, if you don't have consistent three-point shooters and guys that can constantly hit them down, you know, don't force yourself, like you said, with the Bulls. Don't force them to shoot those. So another big thing that's kind of been a topic all season long and all off-season long was the pairing of the two bigs in the starting lineup. Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis. How are the Pacers going to do this? Now, recently, McMillan has been substituting Sabonis out in the first and third quarters around the 5 to 6 minute mark, and then bringing him back in with about 2 minutes left in the first and third quarters to play with the second unit. What are your thoughts on the way he's staggering those two together, and what have you seen and from those two big men playing in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's working relatively well. I mean, it's never going to be a perfect pairing, and I think the main reason for that is honestly because of the fact that neither of them are really legitimate stretch bigs. I mean, I know Sabonis obviously shoots really well from mid-range. Turner's he shoots the ball well from three, but he's never going to be like a really high volume guy. He doesn't have a super quick release. So in today's NBA, you obviously see so many kind of small ball stretch fours that they're basically just wings. You know, they're basically 3-point shooting wings who just happen to be, 6'8", 6'9", and they play, the small ball four. But yeah, I mean, Indiana basically has two really gifted players who both are probably, fives. Playing the five is their best position, but I think they found a way to complement each other reasonably well. You know, Sabonis, I think, is more of the banger, obviously. He's more of the role guy, the guy who, offensive rebounds, has a little more toughness around the basket, and Turner is, he's playing his role. He's spacing the floor. Occasionally he'll post up against a mismatch, but, he's done a good job, like I said, keeping the floor spread, catching, shooting, making shots when he needs to. And then, like you said, I think Coach has done a good job finding out a good way to stagger them and still play with some of those kind of small lineups with, like, Warren at the four and get the bonus playing with that second unit and, just find ways to make it work. I think, long term, it's obviously still, like I said, it's not perfect. So if you ever get great value for one of them, I'm sure you look at it. But I think, like I said, that they have found a way to play together and to play even without each other pretty darn well and be part of a, pretty strong winning group.
Right, and I think we saw last night the importance of Miles Turner with his defensive presence there, keeping the Knicks, really. I think he had three or four block shots there in the last little stretch, or at least he had some contest down there, where he basically forced the Knicks to miss, and it was a crazy, crazy game on Saturday night. But the one thing that a lot of fans are saying is that Miles Turner is not being used properly, not getting enough looks, not being able to really get into an offensive rhythm, while Sabonis is pretty much involved in every offensive action when he's out there on the court. Do you think that the Pacers could maybe try to split that up a little bit more and get Miles more involved in the pick and roll and the pick and pop situation? Or do you think that the way that McMillan is using him is the best way for this team to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. First of all, you made a good point. I totally forgot to just even mention his defense and his, blocking shots and impacting things at the rim. I think he's doing a great job of that. And to me, might be the best or one of the best couple shot blockers in the league. He does a really good job on that end. But, yeah, I mean, offensively, I think, Sabonis is a little bit in kind of like that Draymond role where you kind of run a lot of the offense through him, and he's a great passer, and he gets the ball moving side to side, and he sets so many screens. And I think Turner, he sets the occasional pick and roll, the occasional pick and pop, but I think Sabonis, he's just such a good guy to kind of run the offense through as well as Brogdon. But he moves the ball side to side. He's so unselfish. He's such a good passer. If Turner's if touches are important to him and if he seems to be unhappy with his role, then sure, I guess you look at trying to find more ways to maybe have him, get a little more involved. But I think for the Pacers, I think a big part of his role, honestly, is spacing the floor. I think just the threat of him making corner threes or threes from the slot it gives them a lot of space for their offense, and I think that's kind of what Nate is asking him to do, is just kind of make defenses guard him out there. And when they're guarding him out there, that's what kind of opens then those mid-range shots, for Brogdon, for Lamb and Warren and all those guys. So I think he's playing his role fine right now, but I do agree, that maybe you could find a way to get him a little more involved if that's something that, that he needs or team feels he needs for sure as well.
Right, right. So looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference here, what do you think the Pacers are missing to really be a serious contender in the Eastern Conference? Because they've been stuck in the sixth spot for a while. A lot of the top teams just continue to keep winning. And the Pacer fans are just wanting this Pacers team to succeed and, get a chance at the Eastern Conference Finals possibly. I mean, do you think that they're talented enough right now to reach that? Or do you think there's still some pieces they could upgrade? And where do you think they should work to upgrade those areas?
Yeah, well, I think, right now, I think to me they're kind of the definition of a really gritty, fun team to watch that could compete for 50 wins, but is missing a superstar. And, once hopefully Vic comes back, I mean, he's proven he can kind of be that guy for you all. So I think, if you look at it realistically, if he comes back and is even close to 90% of himself or 80% of himself or whatever, you know, then I think they're in really good shape. I think they're, able to compete with anybody in the East. And for me, I think it's Milwaukee, and then everybody else, I think, is, I'm a big believer in Boston and Miami and Indiana. And, Toronto's really stunned a lot of people, but they're still obviously an elite level team. Nitpicking, small type wish list maybe. I mean, that kind of stretch four I think would help them a lot. You know, a guy like Philly has and Tobias, you guys have, like I said, Warren shooting the ball well, and he's good from the mid-range. He's been good for you guys, but, you know, he's a three realistically. I think if somehow there was some sort of floor spacing, like a Bertans type or something that the Wizards have, I think that guy could potentially help your team a lot, kind of like the role, Bogdanović played at times. I think could certainly help the offense a little bit.
Yeah, now Bertans would be an interesting piece to go after, especially with Washington kind of having the season they're having, below average season, just because they're just injured and their roster's not very good. But, there's guys out there definitely the Pacers could, use, and I agree, we've been talking about it on this podcast for a while, is they never really got a power forward. I mean, their best power forward on the roster right now is TJ Leaf. I mean, and he's not even in the rotation, so they don't really have a power forward. And with the second unit, they're playing McDermott and Justin Holiday in those forward positions. So just really undersized. I like what the bench has done this year so far, but I feel like you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, it's just, you got to find that power forward that can really just help this team. And, Turner is kind of being used as a stretch four in a sense, but defensively, I think that, trying to put Sabonis on forwards like Blake Griffin and those kind of guys, it's going to be difficult for him to guard the perimeter successfully. So, anything else that you have noticed about this team that I haven't brought up?
I think we hit on most. Aaron Holiday is pretty darn good. I got to give him a little credit. I mean, he's going to be a heck of a third or whatever point guard when Vic comes back. He can play. He's a good shooter, good mid-range player, crafty. Like you mentioned, Holiday obviously makes threes off the bench. That's the nice thing, I think, that you guys have guys who can make threes, and is why you're one of the top, three or so percentage three-point teams in the league. It's just, it's not super high volume, because they're bench players or they're, guys that just don't take a ton. But Holiday's done a great job. I mean, McDermott, I think, is, I mentioned in my video, he comes in and just runs off a million pin downs, and you can run plays for him and just kind of gives you an added wrinkle to the offense if things aren't really going well for everybody else. So, I think they do a lot of different things well. Brogdon is, him averaging almost 8 assists, I think, is incredible to me, the leap he's made and how well he's passed the ball playing out of the pick and roll. It's a fun team to watch, and I really do think that, when Vic comes back, to me, I think they're right there at the top of the East.
Well, that's exciting, and I guess there is one person I wanted to ask you about because he's not getting a ton of playing time, but that is the rookie, Goga Batadze. I wanted to get your thoughts on him. I don't know if you scouted him or looked at his tape when the draft was going on and what you thought of him before entering this season, but, a lot of Pacer fans are excited about his potential and his future. Do you think there's anything there with Goga from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I like him. I didn't actually, it's funny, I didn't watch any of them pre-draft or know anything about him, but, mm-hmm. From the few five or so Pacers games that I watched, I was impressed with him. I think he sets really, really good screens. He's a big body, obviously. He's got good touch around the rim, good floaters, good little jump hook. He can make he's got range, to like 18, 20 feet. I think he makes a few kind of picking pops to the elbows, a little bit like Sabonis. I like what I've seen. He's obviously got that size and, a little bit of that Euro flair to the game in terms of, just being a high IQ player and good passer. And, still really, really early, obviously, but he certainly looks like he could be a solid, rotational big going forward.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing with him. There's a lot of potential there. I think, you know, his development playing overseas, playing with men since he was pretty much 15 years old. I mean, he's been around good basketball players for a long time. And I think one thing I've noticed, he's done a good job of not getting into silly foul trouble for a young big man, even though he only plays a few minutes a game right now. He's doing a much better job of trying to play straight up defense without, you know, getting into big men like you can as a rookie. You know how that is. So last thing, I don't want to keep touching on the Pacers here, but my last thing for you is a personal question. So, you know, your Twitter account is very alive and kicking, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on your Twitter account where you get people coming at you, you're calling people out. So what drives you to call out people? What drives you to get fiery on Twitter and have all these little Twitter feuds with, you know, these bloggers, I guess you could say, on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've just tried to be real and authentic, and my personality, I mean, the way I play basketball, the way I coach basketball, I'm a little bit fiery. I mean, I worked for Gary Williams and Randy Whitman, who was a Bob Knight disciple, and, you know, Gary was a legendary college yeller, you know, so I inherited a little bit of that from them. I think I'm a little bit, you know, fiery as a person, obviously, but I think in general, you followed me long enough that I think there is just a lot of nonsense out there. A lot of the kind of big names on Twitter don't really have the credentials or don't really, understand the game well enough to analyze it and take shots at NBA coaches and do the things they do. And I've just tried to kind of speak my mind and provide a new perspective. So at the end of the day, I mean, it is Twitter. It's not real life. I mean, I've been happy to hop on any podcast and have conversations, even with people that I've feuded with. So it's never personal. I don't hate anybody. We're not going to, you know, get in the streets and start fighting or anything. But, I just tried to kind of provide a little bit of a coach's perspective, somebody that was on the inside. And, you know, it's nothing against bloggers in general. There's plenty of great bloggers, there's plenty of great writers, but, you know, there are bad ones, and I just haven't really shied away from calling out some of the nonsense that's been out there. So,
well, I like that you keep it real, man. I'm glad we haven't got into it yet. I'm sure maybe that might come someday if I say something stupid, but anyway, Brian, I really appreciate it. You guys can follow Brian on @ScoutWithBrian on Twitter, and where else can we find you at?
Yeah, pretty much everywhere. Just Scout with Brian with a Y, ScoutWithBrian.com, Scout with Brian on YouTube, Scout with Brian podcast. Pretty much, you type that in anywhere, and you'll find me. So,
awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll have to have you on again soon.
Appreciate you having me, Alex. Thank you.
Alrighty, Pacer fans, that does it for another episode here of Setting the Pace on PacersTalk.net. You can follow us on Twitter at SettingThePace3 and on Instagram at PacersTalk. We will talk to y'all Wednesday morning. Let's go, Pacers, and peace out, Pacer Nation.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.